بشرع تتصدق عنه ويا الله ارحل يا بشار
يا الله ارحل يا بشار
ويا الله ارحل يا بشار
يا الله ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب اخته وهالخطاب الحريه صارت على الباب ويا الله ارحل يا بشار
يا الله ارحل يا بشار
ويا الله ارحل يا بشار
يا الله ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب اخته وهالخطاب.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Henri Barkey, who is a professor of international relations at Lehigh University. He served as a member of the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, working primarily on the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and intelligence from 1998 to 2000. He has authored and co-authored and edited five books, among them Turkey's Kurdish Question with Graham Fuller, Reluctant Neighbor, Turkey's Role in the Middle East, and most recently, European Response to Globalization, Resistance, Adaptation, and Alternatives. He recently had an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times, Syria in the Balance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Henri Barkey.
Thank you.
And friends of the Syrian people are meeting in Turkey, and obviously you've something of an expert on Turkey, 70 Western and Arab foreign ministers are meeting. So far, my understanding is the Saudis have agreed to pay the Free Syrian Army and perhaps, offer bribes to get people to defect. What else has come out of this meeting that caught your attention, Henri Barkey?
Well, at the moment, there isn't that much more except that it's very hard at this stage for people to do anything, only because everybody is deadlocked on whether or not to arm the Syrian opposition, the Free Syrian Army, and clearly there's a great reluctance to do that. So what you saw today in terms of an agreement to have salaries paid to people fighting, members of the Syrian army, is essentially a compromise, and presumably, in a way, that part of that money is, I'm sure, going to go into the purchasing of arms. Look, in the region, finding arms is not that difficult. I mean, there are plenty of arms in Iraq, in Lebanon. Arms can be purchased. It's the big ticket items like anti tank missiles and more sophisticated equipment that's hard to get to come by. But I think finding arms is not small arms. At least is not that difficult. But in terms of the meeting, I mean, I think we have to look at the meeting essentially as one in a sequence of meetings. That is to say, slowly people are getting together, people are exchanging ideas. The different countries, and they are waiting, essentially bidding for time. And the critical factor here will be Syria's reaction, or the Assad regime's reaction, I should say, to the Kofi Annan plan. And Kofi Annan, the UN and Arab League representative to Syria, suggested a ceasefire and for the pulling out of Syrian troops from the major population centers. And yesterday, the Syrians responded by saying that they will not withdraw their troops from the cities. That, I think, is going to be seen within a week or so as a kind of a escalation, if not a breach of UN requests, and it's going to slowly crystallize opinion on Syria. But, the options there are very few.
Well, Henri Barkey, in your op-ed recently in the Los Angeles Times, Syria in the Balance, if the international community wants to stop the bloodshed and prevent disaster, it needs to act rather than react. You mentioned that a few weeks ago an Obama administration source revealed that the United States had been flying drones over Syria to document the atrocities by the Assad regime against the Syrian people. And you also just mentioned the Kofi Annan plan, which is in many ways the Russian plan. The Russian television RT, of course, who are an extension of Putin's domestic propaganda machine, have been showing pictures of alleged atrocities on the part of the Free Syrian Army. Isn't the U.S. making a greater human rights case? The head of the UN Human Rights Commissioner, she's been screaming from the rafters, saying the Syrians are actually torturing children and murdering children. to extract information from parents. It's a hideous regime. My sense is that perhaps one of the reasons why the Obama administration is not releasing these pictures that they apparently have is that if they get the American people all worked up about how terrible the Syrian regime is and something has to be done, well, aren't they in a situation of having to do something and they don't really know what to do?
Well, I really don't think that the American people will say, you know, it's time for the United States to intervene militarily in another Middle Eastern conflict. I mean, I think we are, as a people, at the moment, tired of military engagement. So I don't think that's the fear. Look, releasing such information is always difficult because it involves intelligence sources and there are always opposition within any administration to releasing such detail. Now, the ambassador to Syria, Mr. Robert Ford, did put on his Facebook pages some satellite pictures of heavy artillery concentrations around the city of Homs, etc. I mean, so we can put some stuff up, and I think we should. I believe that if we want the Russians to change their mind, we have to essentially start and engage a worldwide campaign, very much like the Kony 2012 campaign, where you've had social media mobilize people. And I think if you saw demonstrations in Europe and in the United States and elsewhere, certainly in the Muslim world against Russian interests, whether it is airlines or embassies or consulates or companies, that you will then attract Putin's attention. I mean, there is even the Kofi Annan plan, which you said is a Russian plan, so to say, is actually an acknowledgement on the part of the Russians that things are not working out the way they expected. They're trying to buy time for Assad, but even the notion of buying time means that they think Assad is in trouble. They're looking for ways to give him some support. But the time will come when they will no longer be able to protect him because conditions on the ground will change. But if we want to make sure that that moment comes sooner rather than later, my argument is that we need to mobilize public support for it. And that has to be done in terms of not just the United States, but worldwide. And that's going to get the Russians probably to think twice about how much support they offer Assad. They're not going to move away from Assad. We shouldn't be realistic. I mean, they will not move away from Assad. But they may start thinking that Assad is more trouble than he's worth, that he is a liability, that maybe it's time to look for an alternative to Assad. That already would be a great step forward.
So, Henri Bakke, you are talking, though, about employing what's referred to as soft power as opposed to hard power. You know, because you've pointed out in your recent LA Times article, Syria in the Balance, that there are two disastrous outcomes that are likely to happen in the coming 6 months, and that's a weakened regime continuing its hideous violence, and if you arm the opposition, that'll just mean more people are killed, and then alternatively, in 6 months, the Assad regime may be gone. But then you may have some bitter retribution. And my friend Bob Baer, the former CIA officer, he was talking to some of the heads of the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria the other day, and he told me they were complaining that State Department wasn't taking their phone calls. And Bob said, what are you going to do if you win? What are you going to do with the Alawites? And he said, we're going to kill them all. And he said, Bob said, well, that's probably why the State Department aren't talking with you. I mean, some people have even suggested that we could end up, because of the enormous chemical and biological weapons arsenals that the Syrian army have, with a kind of Somalia on the Mediterranean. So both scenarios are incredibly grim.
Right, and that's why I was arguing that we need to come up with a concrete plan and we need to do it now rather than wait and be reactive. I mean, we need to come up with some kind of a game plan of ratcheting that pressure, but But the meeting that we saw today in Istanbul is essentially it's a step, but it's rather meek. Just giving money to the opposition is not going to do it. You need to do a worldwide campaign. You need to make sure that the Syrian leadership, people who are involved in the violence, should know that they will be followed, that they will be eventually prosecuted. So you need to send signals to both the Syrian regime and the Syrian opposition that you mean business. And that's why I said we need to start maybe training an intervention force, kind of a peace force, that once the Assad regime falls, that there will be some kind of a peacekeeping force that will come in to do precisely or to prevent precisely what you just suggested, i.e. a bloodbath by the opposition against the Alawite minority. If we want the Alawites to change sides or for part of them to change sides, if we want the Christians in Syria to start changing sides, we need to send them some signal that their interests will be protected. At the moment, we know that the Assad regime has no incentive to shift change policies, but at the moment the Christians and the Alawites who back the regime also don't have an incentive to switch sides because of exactly what Bob Bauer reported to you, and unless a different message is sent to these people in Syria, this conflict is going to continue.
So, Henri Baki, what about at another track at the UN via the Human Rights Commissioner? Because she's saying exactly what you were saying a minute ago, that Syria should, that the Assad regime and the 4th Division and the Alawite Officer Corps and Maha the Brother, all should be referred to the International Criminal Court, along with the Rami, what's his name, the banker, the right. Cousin.
Makhlouf.
Yeah.
But I would do it gradually. I would say, what I would do is say, okay, here are 10 people we are referring to. We have a list of, let's say, 100 more. If the 90 left, or people who think they might be on the list, if you don't switch sides, then you will be referred to as well. You need to give people an incentive to change sides. The critical thing in Syria is that you need to change the balance in Syria. So you need to get defections, high-level defections from Assad entourage, from the military, from the security forces, from the diplomatic corps. They have remained quite loyal to Assad to date. And that's primarily because they're afraid of the day after. I mean, at the moment, they're safe, and they're banking that, you know, there's a 50% or 70% chance that they will survive, or that the regime will survive. So we need to change that calculation. And everything that has happened to date doesn't change that calculation. That's why I think one has to be somewhat pessimistic about the outcome of the Istanbul meeting, unless they will announce maybe in next meeting, which I think it will be in Paris, more severe measures. But the trick is to change the calculations of people within the regime and the base. One of the things that's interesting is that the Kurds in Syria who have been staying on the sidelines because they're not happy with the opposition, main opposition group, which has essentially taken a very Arab nationalist and partially Muslim Brotherhood attitude. And the Kurds want essentially certain concessions. They would like a federation, but that may not be in the cards in the near future, but they want some acknowledgement of their separate identity within Syria. So they've been staying on the sidelines, and they're an important community. You're seeing some movement. I mean, there was a big demonstration on Friday in Qamishli, which is the heartland of the Kurdish area in Syria, against the regime. And you're starting to see a shift there too. If the Syrian opposition group were to be more inclusive and were to offer something to the Kurds, moving the Kurds into their column would help.
I'm sorry to tell you that we've pretty much run out of time here, Henri Baki, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Henri Barkey, who's a professor of international relations at La Jolla University. He served as a member of the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, working primarily on the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and intelligence from 1998 to 2000. He has co-authored and edited 5 books, and he recently had an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times, Syria in the Balance. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.